You're one of our regular students for Self-Improvement Wednesday. Each week, a chance to learn something new. Your lesson this week, carnivorous snails and slugs, the predators of the garden and seabed. Your teacher is Martin Robinson from the Australian Museum. Good afternoon.
Greetings. How are you?
Yeah, good. Now, we seem to be talking about the least likely predator I can imagine.
Yes, it's one of those odd things. You sort of imagine that the slowness of the pace of snails and slugs would mean that they wouldn't make very good predators at all, but you'd be surprised.
In fact, there are several predatory species even in the garden.
Yes, if any of you have been turning over pavers or other firm cover around your gardens and you've found a flat-looking snail shell that's sort of a translucent honey colour, that's the shell of the carnivorous snail Ostrorhytida capillacea. And that's quite a voracious predator of all things, the ordinary introduced garden snail.
Now, if you think the scene of, a lion hunting an antelope is full of nature red in tooth and claw, wait till you hear what this guy gets up to.
Yeah, well, the carnivorous snail will follow the slime trail of the introduced snails, and whereas all snails, instead of having jaws, they've got a rasping tongue, very much like a rasp. And on the herbivorous ones, they're sort of little short teeth that can scrape off vegetation, like your lettuces and things like that. With the predatory ones, instead of those little short teeth, they've got what look like more like long hooks. And the carnivorous snail will come up, and once it touches the flesh of the other snail, it licks it, which effectively embeds these teeth-like things into the flesh of the other snail. Now, if you've ever seen a snail in distress, the first thing it does is retreats into its shell and blows out a cloud of green frothy bubbles, which is a very good chemical smoke screen. But with the head of the carnivorous snail embedded into its flesh, it just gets dragged straight into the shell with it, and then it just happily rasps away until there's nothing left but a little brown slurry in the bottom of the shell.
So it's basically invited them into its home.
Yes, but unwillingly.
Or dragged them into its home.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a dramatic scene all going on in the garden. There's also another one, a flat leaf-shaped slug.
Yes, if you go out after the heavy rain we've been having and you go wandering around the parks and you see the earthworms crawling along the paths, in amongst the earthworms you might find a pale-coloured, flat-looking slug that's got a tiny little shell right on the very end of its tail. That's an introduced species, but it's a very interesting one called Testacella. And that one is a worm predator. And you'll notice it's got a rather thin, slender head and neck. And it's got these same kind of hook-like teeth structures on its radula. And it goes in and it gaffs the worms. It can either feed on them.
Gaff, as in like a hook almost.
It hooks into the flesh and then just drags them into its mouth and keeps licking until there's nothing there. They go down like a strand of spaghetti. But with that long, narrow head and neck, they can actually go part of the way down the worm burrows and actually gaff them in the burrows as well.
What a horror show you're presenting to us this afternoon. Take us to the Victorian rainforest where a different horror show is underway.
Well, down there, anybody who wanders around the Victorian wetter forests after rain will find there's a number of black-shelled snails wandering around, also slightly on the flatter side, but not quite as flat as the Ostrorhytida. They're also a worm feeder, but they've got a much bigger mouth. So if they find a worm, they can sort of hook it in the middle and draw it in like a double strand of spaghetti. They're very efficient.
It gets even more vivid when we get to the ocean, doesn't it?
Yes, any scuba diver or snorkeler will probably be familiar with the nudibranchs, the little brightly coloured sea slugs that have got all the bright colours like the marine reef fish. Almost all of those are predators, and they feed on a variety of things like sea anemones and hydroids, bryozoans, sponges, things like that, many of which are quite well armed. And if you go patrolling the beaches when there's a nor'easter and you get all the bluebottles coming in, many of you will be familiar with a little silvery, blue-looking, frilly-looking thing that comes in with them. Now, that's Glaucus, Cerus, which is sometimes given the common name of sea lizard, but it's not a lizard, mm-hmm. it's actually a mollusk. That one actually feeds on the bluebottles, including on their stinging tentacles.
Well, I praise its work.
It's interesting, though, because it can actually swallow the stinging tentacles without firing them off and pass them through its gut wall and out into the little frilly appendages that it's got round the sides and uses them as its own defence. So you can actually be stung by a second-hand stinging cell from a bluebottle.
Whilst we're on the beach, you sometimes see these pretty violet-coloured snail shells.
Yes, they'll also come in with the bluebottles. And you'll notice that the snail is attached to a little bubbly raft. Because it's got the shell and is relatively heavy, that bubbly raft helps keep it bobbing around on the surface, where it's in the perfect position to also feed on the bluebottles and their stinging cells.
Even mollusks are predators on some occasion.
Oh, yes. They can get the snails that will feed on a number of other snails in the ocean. If you go around the rock pools, quite a large percentage of those things that you're stepping on with the little rock-hard shells, they're actually predators of the other ones that are on the rocks. So you get the mulberry snails and the cartwright snails and things like that. They will find another mollusk and they'll slowly dissolve a little hole in the shell and then inject in venom and extract the contents. So if you find all the dead shells in the bottom of the rock pools or washed up on the beach, have a look and you'll find that quite a few of them have got a little hole, neat hole drilled into them, and that's the result of some of these predatory mollusks
depositing their poison
through
that. Now, what about cone shells? Because here we have an interesting... They actually hunt fish, which seems impossible.
Yes, most of the prey of the snails we've been discussing so far isn't much faster than a snail or a slug itself. Some of the cone snails certainly hunt worms and some hunt other mollusks, which they actually inject into the flesh rather than drilling a hole in the shell. But the fish-eating cones, they detect fish in the water and then they've got a long sort of proboscis that fires a little venom-tipped dart.
Wow.
And they can extend this many times their own body length up through the column of the water to where a fish is swimming, and they harpoon the fish, and this little dart keeps in contact and doesn't tethers it like on a spear gun, but it also has an extremely fast-acting nerve venom which kills the fish extremely quickly, or at least paralyzes it extremely quickly, because if the fish flutters and jiggles around a lot, it might escape, but more importantly, it might attract the attention of a larger fish which will eat both it and the cone shell. So the fish is immobilized very quickly, and then the cone shell, which is often about the same size as the fish, can expand its mouth and engulf this entire fish. And then it has to hide under the sand or under a rock somewhere because it can't go back into its shell anymore.
But so it pulls in the proboscis in order to drag the fish towards it.
Yes, it's there's two ways that they do this, one of which is they harpoon the fish at the end of this long proboscis and drag it into the mouth and engulf it. And another one is where they actually expand the mouth, so it's like a big funnel, and trap small schools of fish that are resting near the bottom asleep. And then they stick the proboscis inside the expanded mouth and harpoon them there.
And to think people say shells are pretty when you find them on the beach.
They are. And in fact, that's part of the problem, because this very fast-acting venom works equally well on us in many cases. And there have been a number of cases where shell collectors have actually died through picking up some of the larger fish-eating cones. The mollusk-eating cones and the worm-eating cones don't seem to be quite so dangerous, but a big fish-eater, and we've got some of the deadly species around Australia, you don't want to pick up.
Watch out for those cone shells. Thank you very much.
That's okay.
Self-Improvement Wednesday. Your teacher's been Martin Robinson from the Australian Museum. You can listen back to the lesson, of course, online at abc.net.au/Sydney. There you'll find details of how to subscribe to the free Self-Improvement Wednesday podcast and bring all the lessons into your MP3 player for free. That's Self-Improvement Wednesday.